Welcome to episode 55 of the Draft Lab podcast, brought to you by MTGAZone.com. I'm your host, Josh Phillips, aka J2S Josh, and per usual, I'm joined by the best co-host in the biz, all-time 17 Lands Trophy leader, and last season's number one ranked Mythic player, Chris Palmiotti, aka Floridamon. We're going to be introducing you to the world of Dominaria United through its mechanics and some initial thoughts. How's it going this week, Chris?
It's going well. I can't help but think of soccer, like a football team, when I hear Dominaria United. I don't know why. It's just like the thing that comes to my head. That's how I'm kicking it off.
Yeah, I don't want to say what comes to my head when I think about that. So, weekly update. Kaladesh Remastered is officially live, and we've all been loving the little trip back to Artifact Land. We're even coming up on Amonkhet later in the week. After that, we're finally heading back to Dominaria to destroy those pesky Phyrexians. Been having fun in Kaladesh there, buddy?
It's been hit or miss. Some decks have been fun. Some decks have felt like I either get goggles and no artificers, or I get artificers, no goggles. And I'm like, okay, well, this deck is mediocre.
In all my drafts I've done, I have seen in packs one goggles. And then I see everybody else rocking their 4 and 5 goggles deck, and I'm like, come on, that's my thing.
It's one of those formats where you feel like the lack of a smoothing mechanic. Because it's like you get Landscrew and Flood just feel a little more prominent in this format, so it hasn't been super fun. But it's a nice change of pace.
Bounty-wise, nobody completed last week's bounty of Earthquake Dragon equipped with Wand of Orcus. MIK775 did complete to Jordan's original bounty of forming a happy Drider family with two parent Driders and a baby Drider.
Aw, that's so cute.
This week we'll do an Amonkhet Remastered one, so people have a chance to hear this and then pull it off later. So, this is going to be a challenge to recreate something I did when it was first out. You must have a Drakehaven out and cycle a Vizier of Tumbling Sands to untap an Exerted Glorybringer. I clearly won that game. Let's see if any one of you can pull off the same combo.
Just to recap, you need two rares, one of the best rares, so something that won't get passed.
Correct.
And then an uncommon.
Yes.
And then all of them out in the same game.
Right.
All right, what's one hell of a bounty?
We got a lot of listeners, man. We can't just give easy ones.
That's true. I mean, that's a good point.
All right. Are you ready for our pack one, pick one?
Let's do it.
No.
Oh.
Did you guys want to hear more about HBG? Well, that's too bad. We're forward thinking here, and we'll return to this one once we have a new set out. Someone has to deny Chris and put him in his place, so why not me?
Let's just pretend we open the Hourglass Coven and Lazelle, and the first 15 minutes of conversation is all completely pointless when we get to the rare.
Okay, cool. Hey, I'll take Hourglass Coven.
Wow, me too.
Sweet. Such in-depth decisions. Time to talk about the mechanics of Dominaria United. First up, we have Enlist. This is as close to banning as we're getting. When a creature with Enlist attacks, you may tap another creature that isn't attacking and doesn't have Summoning Sickness to add its power to the creature with Enlist power. It's pretty simple. Basically, it's like the creature attacked together with the first creature, so it has to have all the characters that would let it do it. It's tricky, though, because creatures with Defender or that are pacified can still be enlisted. The power is locked in when the ability resolves, and if it's removed in response, use the last known power. Any further changes to the enlisted creature do not affect the creature with enlist.
I'm so glad they made this not count with Summoning Sickness. That would be so disgusting.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, man, it would be an aggro fest up in here, I think.
And then, for the first example card of that one, this is actually a really cool card that fits under a new term Chris and I came up with, called an economical threat, or ET for short, which is pretty much any creature that costs 3 or less that demands an answer from your opponent. Something like a Skullport Merchant. You could also call them lightning rods if you want, but you know, we like ET. So the card is Guardian of New Benalia. It is white 1 for a 2/2. It has enlist. Whenever it enlists, you get to scry 2. And discard a card to give it indestructible until end of turn and tap it. I mean, that card's pretty ridiculous, right?
Yeah, like its fail case is a 2-mana 2/2, so it's making your deck if you just need a body there. And then the fact that you get to start scrying with it, you can kind of trade up with it consistently. It has the discard ability. There's some discard synergies that looks like flipping around. I don't think you want to be doing that too much in white X, but it's not all downside necessarily.
Did you ever play with Seasoned Hollowblade?
Yes, I have, and that card's a pain to deal with.
But the big problem with Hollowblade was if they played a 4-4, it just bricked it. But right. With this, you can get through that. Do they really want to trade their 4-4 for a random card in your hand?
And also, do they want to be taking at least 4 damage?
Right. Nobody's winning there except you.
This is great. I'm curious to see if A, there's a lot of like indestructible in the format, and then B, indestructible's least favorite friend, the minus minus removal spells.
Well, there is an indestructible trick.
Right.
And there's also a minus X, but it's a rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. We're not going to be talking about that today.
Yeah, this card's disgusting. Really good. Glad they made it rare, not uncommon or something stupid like that. But yeah, even just like seeing this card makes me start thinking, oh, I'm going to keep an eye out for removal that shrinks creatures instead of deals damage or just kills them.
The next ability is Read Ahead. This is really simple and it's very flavorful too. It's only on sagas and lets you choose a chapter to start on and put that many lore counters on it. You don't get anything for the chapter skip because you didn't read them. You just skipped to whatever you want to do and did it. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's nice. It's just kind of like if you've got the time, you're not under pressure, you probably start on chapter one and you get the most value out of the card. And sometimes in a pinch, you're just like, well, I need to whatever the third chapter is right away. And if you're making that decision, it usually means that like the card is doing something good for you. Even though you're giving up some value, it's like getting you out of a pinch or it's letting you like maybe push lethal or something. So purely upside, it's just more flexibility.
It's sometimes you're like, I don't really care how Frodo got to the mountain.
Why didn't he just take the eagles?
Don't make sense here, buddy. Don't make sense. So an example of that is the Phasing of Zalfir. And it's blue 2. And step 1 and 2 are another target non-land permanent phases out. It can't phase in for as long as you control this. And step 3, you destroy all creatures. For each creature destroyed this way, its controller creates a 2/2 black Phyrexian creature token. So, no, blue did not just get a straight board wipe. But it's kind of cool because you can hide a couple of your guys under it. Or if you're just like, I can't deal with what they have out there. We have about the same number of creatures, but theirs are way better than mine. You're just like, well, everything's a 2/2 right away.
Yeah, but in order to do that scenario, you need to put this in your deck.
Right.
Which I feel like is not something I would advise.
Oh, it'll go in certain decks.
I'm skeptical. I don't know. The fact that they get 2/2s is
But you do annoying. Too.
Yeah, but like, so what? So you're at parity after this? Obviously, you build your deck around this and you try to somehow leverage this so you're not at parity after the fact.
Well, can leverage
obviously,
it,
you can do it by phasing out your stuff, but it seems, I don't know. They know it's coming. If you don't drop this on turn 3 and you start phasing out stuff, they know it's coming, so they just don't play their creatures. And your creatures are phased out, so you can't put them under pressure for doing that. They just like leave the 2/2s back, which feels kind of meh. I guess I'm having trouble seeing that, like, when you pick this up, because you're not going to start picking this card up early because it's probably going to be uncommons or commons better than this. And then by the time you get past this card, like pick 5 or 6, you only care if you're kind of heading down the direction of this deck anyway. So it just seems like a weird card to me. But Read Ahead as the ability is pretty cool.
I wasn't saying this is a good card. I'm just saying that it has a place.
I know, but I just figured while we are talking about the card, I should dunk all over it, in my opinion.
Hey, I like 20 gems as good as the next person.
That's fair. That's fair.
All right. The next ability, Domain. This is a throwback to Invasion Block. It's an ability based off the number of different basic land types you control. While it probably won't come up too much in Limited, something like a Triome actually counts for all 3 basic land types, while Water or Grave would count for 2, but Edarkar Wastes counts for 0. You got all that?
Yeah, in like the line description of the card, it has to say like mountain, swamp, forest, or something. It can't just say land. That means it's counting for 0.
Correct. So for an example, we have Nashoba Brawler. It's green and 1 for a star 3. Trample and power is equal to the number of basic land types among lands you control.
It's 2/2/3 in the vast majority of floors. Sometimes it'll be a 1/3 for a couple turns, so you find your second land or something. The potential to have, let's say, a 2/2/3 that sometimes is like a 2/3/3 in certain decks with trample, pretty nice.
And it could be 5. Who knows? We actually don't know all the cool color fixing. You have to assume they have some kind of fixing in here that's worth playing. Otherwise, why bring back Domain?
Yeah, there's got to be some Evolving Wilds thing happening, for sure.
Yeah, or Harrow or something like that.
Yeah.
It'll probably get revealed whenever they drop the whole set. Like, cards that aren't super exciting for people, but are like the meat and potatoes of the Limited format.
Yeah, another hint at this is you got a lot of cards whose kicker cost is a different color than the main card. It starts to kind of point you towards like, oh yeah, there's definitely going to be maybe some 3-color splashing happening.
And because it's Domain, though, you don't want an effect like a Prophetic Prism, even though that would be helpful for the kicker costs. Right. It doesn't help with Domain. Speaking of Kicker, if you don't know what Kicker is, you're probably pretty new to Magic. Almost every new ability is some form of Kicker. Basically, you pay whatever the extra cost is of the card and get the extra effect.
Does anyone still have a good explanation as to why they made Cleave? I'm still waiting for that. Basically Kicker, except more confusing.
Correct. Our example is Archangel of Wrath. So this is a 4-mana, 3/4 flying lifelink, and it has an option to Kicker for black and or red. And when it enters the battlefield, it was kicked, it deals 2 damage to any target. If it was kicked twice, it deals another 2 damage to any target. So you get to deal 4 damage with lifelink anywhere you want, face, random creatures, split up on top of this 3/4 flying lifelink.
This card would be significantly worse if it was just 2 white, black, red, and you got all the abilities every time, but you had to pay the cost. It's so good because you could play this on curve in a game you're already ahead, and it's just such a huge threat in the sky that's going to be impossible to race. And then you top deck it, and it's like even a more powerful card, assuming you built your deck to like kick it appropriately, right? I really like the design team's like recent journey down the path of like built-in flexibility within cards. It definitely like adds more decisions to the game. It adds a lot more like risk, reward, thoughtful deck building, and just like making cards that are sometimes like purely sideboard cards attached to an effect that is something you can mainboard is like another kind of benefit from this design approach. I'm just really enjoying the flexibility built in the cards and like the multi options within each individual card these days.
And the next ability is Stun Counters. This is just kind of a new way to say doesn't untap its controller's next untap step. It just removes one counter every time it's supposed to untap, which makes it technically better than the previous way, because even if you try to untap it with another effect, it just removes a stun counter. So like if you had Clever Conjurer and you're like, oh, I'd like to untap my creature, it still doesn't untap. It just removes a stun counter.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like this. It's a cool take on like a classic effect. Eventually they're going to run out of types of counters, right? It seems like we get a new type of counter every other set these days.
For an example, it's Impede Momentum, and it's a blue and a colorless. Unfortunately, it's a sorcery, but it's tap target creature and put 3 stun counters on it and scry 1. I'm unsure if this will be good enough. It really depends how tempo-based your deck is, because if you're going to kill them the next 3 turns, it's just a removal spell.
Or if you have like insane top end and you just literally need to survive till like turn 5 or something, Right. Maybe this could be decent too.
And the scry lets you try to get to an answer.
Right. On its face, in theory, it's like card disadvantage, right? Spending a card to just temporarily remove a card. We've seen that kind of effect in white sometimes, and it hasn't been great in the past.
All right, so of course I'd like to talk about a few random cards. So first card I want to talk about, Weatherlight Compliated. It's 2 mana for a vehicle with 5/5 flying. As long as it has 4 or more counters on it, it's a Phyrexian creature in addition to its other types. Whenever creature control dies, put a Phyresis counter on Weatherlight Completed. Then draw a card if it has 7 or more Phyrexian counters on it. If it doesn't, scry 1. Did you notice something missing there?
There is no crew.
That is right.
This is hard to know if it will be good, but my gut is saying it's not going to be good.
Because if you drop it on turn 2, and then just through natural attrition, you should eventually activate it while getting a bunch of scries, and then I doubt you'll ever hit the card drawing point on it, but I could see it getting activated. But if you draw it later in the game, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, and even dropping on turn 2, it's like you need a specific deck, I think. You need a deck that you're okay trading things away, and you have like enough tools to do that, creatures that will trade and not just bounce off. Or creatures that they just will be like, okay, I'll ignore those and fly over them and never put them in combat.
It's going to have times it's good, but there's also times this thing's just going to be awful.
If there's like a self-sack thing going on, I saw like a common that basically makes a 2/1 every turn and then sacrifices it at the end of combat or the end of the turn, something like that. If you like get this card with cards that do things like that, then yeah, I'm into it, right? Because then you're basically getting a scry 1 every turn for free, and then eventually you just get a 5/5 flyer. But yeah, I think this is kind of a card where your deck has to feel it, like, kind of in a vacuum, and you can't rely on just, like, interacting with your opponent's deck to turn it on. Definitely an interesting design.
Yeah. The next card is Phoenix Chick. Dare I say this is one hot chick?
Might get canceled, bro.
Oh, man. All right. One red for a 1/1 flying haste. It cannot block. When you attack with three or more creatures, you can pay red red. And if you do, return it from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped and attacking with a +1/+1 counter on it. I heard some people saying they thought this was really good and limited, but I'm kind of questioning that.
Well, the fact that it can't block means you have to be sacking this, right? Or discarding it or something to get the value of it. Because if you just play 1/1 flying haste and it's like poking every turn, sure, you can make the argument that that's a clock and they're going to have to block it eventually. But I don't quite buy that. Again, this is another card where it feels like your deck has to be able to get this into the graveyard for some value on its own, or else it feels like probably shouldn't make the cut unless there's like some extremely aggressive deck running around. Or like good enchantments, where this is a body that wears like a good enchantment, good equipment, and then they have to trade with it, and then that's bad. So like that's another thing that would bump this up a bit.
Well, also, how often are you attacking with three or more creatures unless you're alpha striking?
Right. It does come back tapped and attacking, which is nice as a 2/2 at first. That's cool.
Always. It's never going to be above a 2/2. It doesn't keep that counter.
Oh, yeah. Duh. Yeah. I think this is only going to be good if it's basically a good vessel for enchantments or equipment or something.
If you're an all-in aggro deck, then sure. But if you're trying to play any kind of mid-range, I don't think this is going to do it.
Yeah. I mean, if there's like great sack payoffs, right? Like, and this could be good fodder, right?
But the problem with sacking stuff for that is that you still have to be wide enough to be able to get value out of it.
Well, I'm thinking it's a 1/1 that basically chips in, let's say, 3 damage on average, right? You sack it. Sometimes you get to bring it back, sometimes you don't. I assume you get some value from sacking your own creature. It's not like the worst thing ever.
Have you read Karn Living Legacy yet?
Yeah, it's garbage.
I'm not even going to read it here. This is probably like the worst limited planeswalker they've done in a long time, right?
You should read it. People are not going to look at the four spoilers. We can go through it fast.
4 mana. It has 4 loyalty. You can plus it to create a tapped Power Stone token, which is an artifact with tap at a colorless. Mana can't be spent to cast a non-artifact spell. So to begin with, how many artifacts do you have in your deck, right?
Right.
It can be used to pay for its second ability, but still, your plus ability is basically doing nothing. And for -1, you can pay any amount of mana to look at that many cards on top of your deck, then put one of those into your hand and the rest of the bottom of your library in a random order. So if you say, do this for 2, you plus it, and then you do it for 2 the next turn. You're 5 mana into drawing 1 card. -7, you get an emblem with tap, non-tapped artifact, control, the emblem deals 1 damage to any target. So like anything, if you make a bunch of power stones and then get the ultimate off without doing anything with your 4 mana planeswalker, then sure, you can probably pull off the win from there.
Yeah, it's kind of sad to use a planeswalker slot. I don't know if it even works like that. But, you know, like, there's only so many planeswalkers in any set. And for this to be one of them is kind of a bummer from a draft perspective.
Well, people don't even want to play this in Constructed. Like, what were they doing with this?
That's a good point.
This big main character from so many years worth of stories. And they just do him dirty like this.
Yeah, I don't know. Poor card. This should be a dying legacy at this point.
2 more, and we're done. First one, Lightning Strike. As a common, this is going to be like the definitive removal from what we've seen so far. So you have to judge creatures differently. Like, oh, does this have 3 in the butt? Well, dies to Lightning Strike.
And the fact that it goes to face, so good. This is going to be one of those premium. It's like, well, there's nothing else in the pack. Well, Lightning Strike, I'm happy to take this, even though it's a 2-drop common. I have to imagine. Of course, I don't know with the full spoiler, but I can't imagine a card just this like bread and butter solid is ever going to be that bad.
And the last thing we talk about is the Defender cycle from the Uncommons. These are the Shrines of New Dominaria. You've got the Wingmantle Chaplain. So it's a white 3 for an 0/3 Defender. When it enters the battlefield, you create a 1/1 white bird creature token with flying for each creature with Defender you control. Whenever another creature Defender enters the battlefield, you create another 1/1. These are cool because they're not legendary. So like that was kind of the problem with the build them all with your Shrines. Is you're like, oh, I've got to get one of each color. I've got to splash all these things. But this one, if you're like, oh, I got like 3 of this one and 2 of that one, it doesn't matter. You're still just jamming them, getting all that shrine value.
Yeah, it's nice that you don't have to be 5 colors to have like a quote unquote defender deck. But I will say them having like a cycle across every colors of things that synergize with each other is another clue to me that they're going to kind of enable multicolor stuff in some way here.
Oh, yeah. We'll get all into that stuff. Well, you won't be here next week. You're going to be on vacation again. How many Gator Fests can they have in 1 year?
Apparently a lot.
All right, that brings us to Cool Play of the Week. We have to Jordan, who is our guest star next week, attacking all in, knowing that he loses if his opponent knows about the alchemy changes. But ironically enough, his opponent didn't know that Young Red Dragon can block now, giving Benji the win.
The irony.
Right. All right, that brings us to Chris's bad beat.
All right, here's my bad beat. It's really bad. It's a little embarrassing I lost this game, honestly, but here it is. Earlier in the game, I resolved a Lysel, which right there alone should be like, oh, you're good. You're going to win this game. I specialize it for blue. I steal their Ancient Gold Dragon out of their deck, right? Seek out probably their strongest card. I eventually am able to cast it, thanks to treasures or something. And then I have a vile duplication, so I get to copy it, okay? The game goes on. You're thinking, how is the game still going on? They specialize Luca Mina, locking down one of my Ancient Gold Dragons after playing a couple of Juvenile Mist Dragons. So they've, like, prevented me from killing them for a few turns. And they decide to start racing me. So they attack with their two Mist Dragons. I'm down to 7 life. I'm top decking lands. There are 5 after I connect with my dragon. So, like, I'm like, okay, it's a 2-turn clock on my dragon. I just need to roll anything but a 1 to survive the crackback from the 2/4/3s at 7 life. And even if I roll a 1, I just need them to not have removal for my 1/1. And you all know where this is going. I hit, they go down to 5. I roll a 1. I have 1 fairy dragon. They go untap, specialized weapon or whatever. What's it called? The thing that deals 5 damage to a flyer. Kill my 1/1, swing back for 8, killing me. Leave me at -1. So just to recap, I lost a game where I resolved a Lysel and double Ancient Gold Dragons and got to connect with a gold dragon.
That takes talent.
It is a masterful bad beat, I will say. When I rolled a 1, it was that amount of frustration that like just skips over the whole anger part and just goes to like laughing. Yeah, I was like, okay, cool. Thanks, game. Because I knew as soon as they untapped, my 1/1 was dying. There's no way they didn't have it. How would they not have it?
Of course they would.
I'm sorry. Anyway, that was my bad beat.
All right. So everyone, come check out our totally free Discord where you can get deck techs, pick advice, check out trophy decks, discuss limit, or just chill. You can find the Draft Lab on Twitch at J2SJosh, Floridamon, Icky, EagleTV, to Jordan and DeFore. Don't forget to check out mtgazone.com for awesome strategy articles by the Draft Lab. You can also check out the MTGA Zone YouTube channel featuring videos featuring me. Well, that's 55 episodes in, and thank God Dominaria United doesn't have Specialize.